In Play Radio from William Hill. We've got it covered.
Well, we've got a busy day coming up on William Hill's In Play Radio. Several high-profile events in many different sports taking place today, and we'll be live through until 1 a.m. with all of the action. And first into the studio, we have Nick Walsh, Tom Kerwin, Mel Wharton and Pete Farries. They'll be live from 5 through until 10. And then staying on live 10 until 1 a.m, Mark Wilson, Pete Farries and James Butler will stay live for the NFL football. That's just one of the things we have to come this evening. There's also football in the Euro 2016 qualifiers, England in action tonight, and there's also the final of the men's US Open as well, so plenty still to come on In Play Radio this evening. And we can start with a look ahead to England's first qualifier in the Euro 2016 campaign. They take on Switzerland, and the betting looks like this at the moment. Switzerland are 17-10, the draw 19-10, and England also 19-10. One or two injury worries as well for England. And earlier in the week, Lee Phelps and Dave Kellner looked ahead to this match on the punt, and from what I understand, Lee fancies an anytime goal scorer this evening, currently priced up at 11-5.
This is William Hill's In Play Radio. Email us inplayradio@williamhill.co.uk. Contact us on Twitter at Will Hill In Play. In Play Radio, your eyes on a world of sport.
England haven't been beaten in a meaningful qualification match since Croatia in 2007.
Yep.
They did get beaten in a qualifier by the Ukraine in 2009, but we're cruising at that point.
Yep.
That was meaningless. My problem here is there's a dearth of talent, in my opinion, from a personnel perspective. They need inspirational leaders both on and off the pitch. England haven't got that.
We do a podcast called the FWA podcast, which is where we talk to the football writers. Neil Ashton was the guest on it yesterday, available on Audioboo and at williamhill.com/podcast. But Neil Ashton is his job is being with England, and it was really interesting to kind of pick his brains. He was, at first I was quite critical of England, and he kind of defended them a little bit.
Yep.
As the podcast wore on, it seemed like he got more and more annoyed with them, and he said a couple of things. He said there's no plan for England.
Okay.
Whatsoever, as in from the FA, there's no plan. The other thing he said was what you've just said. He said there are no natural leaders in the dressing room. There is no one who makes a noise in the dressing room. And
no.
He said that's the most worrying thing for this group of players. There's no one there who can, stand up in whoever you want to say, Tony Adams style or, Terry Butcher style or even Steven Gerrard style, who isn't exactly Mr. kind of, outlandish, is he? But there's no one. And that is a worry, isn't it? Going away to somewhere like Switzerland.
Big worry.
Who aren't the... Look, all this hype about Switzerland that we heard about 4 or 5 years ago hasn't really come true. They've only lost one game in home qualifiers in the last two tournament qualifiers. The World Cup, they only lost one. They didn't lose any. And in the European Championship qualifiers, they lost one game. It was their opening home qualifier, and they lost it 3-1 to England.
Okay.
And I thought to myself, well, what was that team like in 2010, just to remind myself? The goals were scored by Wayne Rooney, Adam Johnson and Darren Bent. Well, Adam Johnson and Darren Bent aren't the golden generation, are they? But what struck me was when I looked at the team, was if you look at the back line, it was much better. Joe Hart in goal still, Ashley Cole, Phil Jagielka, Glenn Johnson, Julian Lescott, Stephen Gerrard, Gareth Barry and Milner. That looks like a much more solid back line, doesn't it, than the one we've got at the moment. I know, maybe people might say, yeah, Johnson's no good, really. Lescott is not a quality player, but I think Jagielka is, I think Cole was, Gerrard and Barry, very solid, and Milner. It's not particularly creative, that.
No.
But it's very, very solid in the middle of the park, and we obviously got goals, from Rooney, then, second half goals from Johnson. Walcott was up front with Defoe and Rooney. I still would have Rooney in there. Remember, the stat didn't bear any fruit in the end. I said before, the Norway game that Rooney's record in friendlies wasn't great. He got the penalty and scored it. Obviously, Gerrard would have taken the penalty beforehand. But that obviously means that his record in qualifiers is very good, because his record in major tournaments isn't particularly great, is
no.
it? So the majority of Wayne Rooney's 41 goals have been scored in qualifiers, scored in Switzerland last time they won. On Switzerland, because we haven't really spoken about them that much, for that European Championship qualification group that I mentioned, this is when they were all the rage. They scored 2 against Montenegro at home, 3 against Bulgaria, 4 against Wales, lost to England in the home games. The World Cup qualifiers, they scored 1 against Slovenia, they drew 4-4 with Iceland, which is not particularly great. They beat Cyprus 1-0 and drew 1-1 with Norway and a 2-0 win against Albania. That's not fantastic. Obviously, they went to the World Cup and performed much better than England did because they made it through the group stages. But they were very open, weren't they? I remember watching the France game when France, you know, destroyed them. And then all of a sudden, right near the end of the game, they kind of came back at them a bit. Scored two against Ecuador, but that was a very, very late winner against Ecuador. The Honduras match, which I think I'm right in saying was played in Manaus. Honduras had, I mean, they had so many chances in that match. How they didn't score, I still don't know. Shaqiri got the hat trick, if you remember, back to that game. But yeah, I think Honduras had 17 shots on goal in that match.
Yeah,
and Honduras weren't great.
No,
and somehow they didn't score one. Switzerland are an open team. They shut down and tried to defend for their lives against Argentina and did it very well 2 minutes before full time and extra time when Di Maria got the winner in that Argentina Switzerland game. So they can do it. I just don't think they'll try and do it against England. They know England are, you know, in a sticky patch. They know that England will be, you know, they won't be the most confident team. I think Switzerland will go for England here, and I think that'll play into England's hands to a certain extent.
Really?
I'm hoping that Hodgson, going back to one of his former, you know, stomping grounds, will set his team up to be defensive first and then look to hit on the break with the pace of Sterling.
Okay.
That's what I'm hoping will happen.
So as far as the game's concerned then, Lee, bets on this match then. Switzerland 17-10, draw 19-10, England 19-10.
God. it's hard, isn't it? I think the draw.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I've got enough confidence in England. It's a decent price. You know, England nearly 2-1 to go and win away from home at a team who only drew 1-1 with Norway in World Cup qualifiers in 2012.
Better in the World Cup than England, though. Much better in the World Cup.
They were, but they also leaked goals alarmingly. I've got to tell you, I am tempted by England, but the fact that the draw is the same price and I'm not confident enough, I'll probably go with the draw on the outrights if I have to pick one. But I'll probably swerve the outrights, really, and just look at goals, to be honest with you.
Yeah, over 2.5 goals in the game, available at 13-8, over 2.5 goals. Four to nine the under.
Price. And I know, like we said already, Switzerland kept Argentina to nil, but I don't see them doing that. They did that because, you know, because Argentina are a fantastic team. You know, over 2.5 landed in the Honduras game, and it should have been more. Over 2.5 landed, over 6.5 landed in the France game. Over 2.5 landed in the Ecuador game as well. As I say, you know, they were. It was all sort. It's a mixed bag in the qualifying campaign for the World Cup. The 4-4 against Iceland, 1-0 against Slovenia. But I don't, you know, those games weren't for want of trying to score goals. It's not like Switzerland just set up. You know, 11 shots on goal from Switzerland in that game, and 12 shots on goal from Slovenia. It finished 1-0. So it's not like it's a boring. They don't sit back and try and defend. They do attack. It's just that for some reason, you know, they didn't score in that match. Obviously, the 4-4 speaks for itself against Iceland as well. You know, and similarly, you know, in the game against Cyprus, it was only a 1-0, but they had 15 shots on goal at Switzerland. So I think it'll be high scoring, relatively anyway. I think maybe over 3.5 could even land, but that over 2.5 price is great. And I'm going to go back in with Sterling to score a goal. I did it against Norway, and I think he was man of the match, personally.
He won the penalty.
I won the penalty. Don't think you paid out for that, did you?
No, unfortunately not.
14-5 anytime. And just a little sneaky one for anyone who's looking. Gary Cahill, 17-2. Switzerland from set pieces looked pretty ropey at times in the World Cup. Looking back through some of those World Cup qualifiers, I know they conceded a goal in the Norway game. Brede Hangeland scored that goal, and you know, I think set pieces is where maybe they could be exploited, especially if England are defending first and foremost and looking to hit them on the set piece. So a little outside bet on Gary Cahill to grab a goal, but my main bet in the match really would be Raheem Sterling to score, and that, like you've just put up, that over 2.5, it just looks a bit big to me, that really. Over 1.5 is 4-9, which I think for any acca is a great price. Not the sort of price I'd play, but for any kind of acca that you're doing, I think for two goals in this game, yeah, I like that.
So there you go. Lee Phelps likes goals in the game. He's not too sure on the result, but expecting plenty of goals as Switzerland take on England. After that, we have the tennis, the US Open men's final, and it's Kai Nishikori against Marin Cilic. And earlier on in the day, I spoke to Sky Sports' Nick Lester to look ahead to the final that nobody really expected. It's the first time since 2005 we've had a final without the Big Four. No Djokovic, Nadal, Murray or Federer. And it's the first time in 10 years that neither Federer or Djokovic have been in the final as well. So something of an upset with these two getting here. And I asked Nick what he thought of the surprise lineup at Flushing Meadows.
Well, I think the first thing to say is it's worth reflecting on where these two were a year ago, because it's an astonishing story. I mean, 12 months ago, Kai Nishikori lost in the first round of the US Open to Dan Evans of Great Britain, who's now gone down to 300 in the world. And a year ago, Marin Cilic wasn't even playing because he was banned. You know, he'd served his ban, he was serving his ban, having been found with a banned stimulant in his system. So from that regard, it's remarkable, really, the way these two have come through. I mean, they have played, for my money, the best tennis, certainly Cilic, he's ever played in his life. Without a shadow of a doubt against Federer, no one would have beaten Cilic on that day. I was totally unstoppable. And, you know, he's cleaned up his game. Since his return from the ban, obviously happened in November, but he only played one event in November. He's come back strong. He's come back, I think, with a real wake-up call. It's been a complete wake-up call for him. I think he was drifting. And I think it happens to a lot of players. You know, I think there are a lot of players out there who perhaps get to sort of 30 in the world, don't quite realize what they've got, you know, earning a lot of money. And I think that happened for Cilic. You know, he's one of the nicest guys you can meet, is Marin, and it's good to see the way he's playing. And for Nishikori, you know, this is a guy who had an operation. He went under the knife 4 weeks ago. You know, had an operation to remove his cyst. Again, wasn't even sure if he was going to play here. And it just goes to show, you know, you give yourself a chance, you come in fresh, playing aggressive tennis. And likewise, I think, you know, he's probably played up there with the very best tennis of his life too.
Yeah, both playing very well. And just to put it further in perspective, it's the first final in New York to feature two slam final debutants since 1997, when Greg Rozeski took on Pat Rafter. It's also the first Asian man to reach a slam in the Open era in the shape of Nishikori, the first Croatian to reach a major final since Goran Ivanisevic back at Wimbledon in 2001, and Ivanisevic now Cilic's coach. So how much do you think that's rubbed off on him?
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about it. I mean, they've changed the service action. The ball toss is lower. Cilic, I think, was thinking about it a little too much before. Certainly Goran, I think, has got him just to hit it. I mean, he's got one of the best actions in the business. I think probably before there was just a bit of overthinking. Now it's just a case of hit it. You know, I've got the motion, pick your spot and hit the lines. And then the way he served it out against Federer with those three aces in the semi-final tells you just a lot about his confidence now and how he perceives himself, because that is a lot of what tennis is about. You know, we talk about confidence, but confidence stems from how you see yourself. And I think Cilic sees himself in a different light nowadays. So he's been super impressive. You know, the forehand was always very, very shaky for Cilic. Now that seems to have tightened up as well. His baseline game, his backhand down the line has been super impressive. You know, you watch Cilic over the years, and I've watched him for a long time, and, you know, guys were able to draw errors from him. They were able to draw errors. They were able to make him miss. They were able to outmaneuver him. Something that hasn't happened at this tournament. You know, he's been rock solid from the back of the court. It's not just been the serve, but it's been the ground strokes that have been watertight as well. And, you know, as I say, he's played without a shadow of a doubt the best tennis of his life so far. And one more win will do it for him. It's a lot of this is obviously going to come down to who handles the occasion better. But Cilic has certainly got the weapons, certainly looking at the two prices, and I think he's a bit of value.
Yeah, let's take a look at the betting then. Nishikori is 4-5, Cilic even money. You mentioned there you think Cilic could be a bit of value. Also, do you factor in the fact that Nishikori had 2-5 setters before he beat Djokovic as well? Do you think it's going to finally start to catch up with him?
Well, I feel like we've said that for the last couple of conversations, haven't we? And it hasn't really materialised. I think the fact he's had a couple of days off is going to be, you know, I think he's going to be fresh. I don't really see that being an issue, perhaps, as long as it goes deep. I mean, obviously, he's a guy who is, you know, he's an aggressive baseliner, Nishikori. His forehand this tournament has been as good as it's ever been. The backhand's always been world-class. I saw a quote from Nick Bollettieri the other day who said that, you know, there's only two ball strikers and three ball strikers he's seen ever in the world who can compete, and that was Marcelo Rios and Xavier Melis. So that's fairly high praise from a guy who's seen a lot of tennis. So there's no doubt that Kai's got the game. The second serve has obviously still been the weakness for him. to beat Djokovic, who was below par. Make no mistake about it, Djokovic was below par a couple of days ago. Obviously a fantastic win. I think a lot of this matchup is going to come down to the serve and the return. Simple as that. If Cilic can find a lot of good first serves, Nishikori is going to have to return as well as he ever has done. He did so against Raonic. Obviously, you mentioned that, so he's had that kind of matchup. I'm slightly leaning towards Cilic. I really am. I know the head-to-head is 5-2 in favour of Nishikori. They've had on clay, obviously, a couple of times. But if you look through those numbers and go back and look at the stats of those matches, Cilic actually only served about 40% of first serves in those matches. So I think, you know, if he's up to around 60%, which is probably about half of the course, just under, in slightly quicker conditions, in hotter conditions, I think that's going to help him get a few more free points. I just hope he handles the occasion, because I'm pretty sure Nishikori will, because I think the way that he's such a level-headed character, Nishikori, he's a very calm personality. A lot of that stems from his upbringing. I think he'll handle the occasion. I just hope Cilic does as well, because I think if Cilic does, for me, he certainly has the weapons, I think, to win this one.
Okay, leaning towards Cilic then. What about the set betting? How do you see this going? Do you think it will go the distance, or do you see one of them getting on top pretty early on?
I mean, Cilic is a guy, you know, one break a set is generally enough for him, the way he's been playing. So I think it could be four. I think it could well be four. I think Cilic in four would just about be where I'd be looking to lay my money at the moment. And so I think, you know, it's so tight to call. And as I say, there is the unknown of nobody really knows how either man is going to cope. I think Marin has got a renewed vigour since the ban. I really do. I think that's played a big part in everything that's gone on in the last 6 months for him, I think. Being away from the sport for 4 or 5 months for him was just a shock to the system, a huge shock to the system. And I think he felt maybe he was wasting it a little bit, drifting. And I think you've seen a lot of that in his recovery this year. So for me, I'm going to stick with Cilic. I think he's got the weapons at a decent price to come through today.
Okay, Cilic to win in four then. So 3-1 to Cilic on the set betting. That's 4-1. Just four sets in the match is 11-8. The match result on both players to win a set. Cilic is 8-5 in that market, and even money just to win the match on match betting. Let's just have a quick summary then, Nick, if you wouldn't mind. Just spin us through your thoughts for the men's US Open final one more time.
Yeah, I'm going for Cilic. I think he's the way he's been serving, the way he's been playing from the back of the court, it's the best I've ever seen him play. It really is. I think he's just he's watertight at the moment. I think he's hungry. He's very focused. He has a lot of belief in himself. And I think, you know, he has the armoury to be able to hit holes in Nishikori too often, as long as he can deliver. As long as Cilic can hold his nerve, I think we could well see the Croat emulating his coach by winning a major.
So Nick Lester leaning towards Marin Cilic, then he fancies him to emulate his coach, Goran Ivanisevic, in winning a major. And finally, we also have action in the NFL this evening as well. Two matches taking place with New York Giants at the Detroit Lions, and the San Diego Chargers are at the Arizona Cardinals. And earlier on in the week, we heard from Gil Alexander over in America, and he's got some pretty strong opinions for tonight. So let's hear his thoughts on the Monday Night Football.
In Play Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. Specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
It's time to cross over to the other side of the pond and welcome Gil Alexander to In Play Radio, beating the book on Twitter, and the host of many, many a great betting podcast over in the States. Gil, great to have you along.
Lee, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
No problem, mate. We're going to have a quick look forward to two matches. The Giants at the Lions, first of all. This is Monday, 12:10 a.m. in the UK, and there'll be lots of people with blurry eyes come Tuesday morning who stay up for this one. The Giants at 5-2 on the money line, 1-3 the Lions. Any of our US listeners and Gil in particular will be talking about +250 and -300 on the money line there. The main theme here is Eli Manning working with a new offensive coordinator. Not really gelled pre-season. They're going to have to in this matchup though, because of the threat of Detroit's offense. Gil, is that how you see it? Is that the main area for you?
Absolutely. That's been the theme this preseason. Eli Manning, it's the first time that Eli Manning's ever had to learn a new offense. We know that he's won the two Super Bowls, but this is like being, in some respects, a rookie all over again. And they're having all kinds of trouble with it. Their offensive line looks very suspect. And Detroit, for all their great offensive weapons, they have a pretty ferocious defensive front with Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, and Ziggy Ansah. So you would figure that Detroit would have their way with the Giants in this game.
What about the total points here? It's under and over 47. Again, in American speak, -110. Here in the UK, our listeners more used to the 10-11 price. What do you make of that? Do you expect it to be high scoring? 47 seems. Does that seem about right to you?
It seems about right. I don't have a real opinion on that total. You know, the average NFL total this week is right around there, a little below that. I think with 46 is about average. 47 is tough. I mean, again, the Detroit defense is what makes the total sort of a tough play. I love the Lions giving 6. That's the better bet to me. The total could go either way because you just don't know how dominant that Detroit defense is going to be. If they're, you know, supremely dominant, obviously the under looks good, but there's a chance, there's always that chance, that Detroit is going to revert to their old ways. They're a very undisciplined football team. They finished like the Giants did. Detroit actually finished the season last year poorly, so we'll see if there's any carryover. I'd stay away from that total this game.
Yeah, so you're saying you'd rather look at the match spread then?
Yes, rather than match spread, I think Detroit giving the 6 is probably the better play. To be honest with you, for both of the Monday night games, Monday night here in the United States, these are the games that, you know, they're standalone on a Monday night, so we're compelled as bettors to bet on them. But I like to tell people, had these two games been on Sunday afternoon, they might not be games we gravitate towards. They're a little tougher than some of the ones, for instance, like the Niners and Cowboys. To me, that was the most ridiculous spread of the week. A clear play on the Niners, and that's coming to fruition. But if those two Monday night games weren't on Monday night, I'm not sure that we rush to bet them.
The other game is the Chargers against the Cardinals. This is 3:20 a.m. in the UK. As you mentioned there, you know, because of the way the schedule set up, you tend to get a lot of turnover in Vegas for this one. What are we talking here in terms of volumes in Vegas on the Monday night games then?
Oh, it's big time because, you know, we call this the chase game. The chase game is where all the square bettors who lose all day Sunday, they desperately try to make all their money back in the Monday night game. We have two Monday night games. This would be the second of those two Monday night games. So it is the chase game. But you're liable to see, you know, real good money. You know, if a Super Bowl gets about $100 million in the state of Nevada, this is always the biggest bet game of any NFL week. And I expect it to be so here. But you won't see, you know, more than a fraction of that. It's still week one, and people are still warming up to the NFL season.
Both these sides surprised the books last year, didn't they? They both performed at a higher level than expected. The Chargers finished the year as one of the hottest teams in the league, Gil.
They both did, actually. You know, the Chargers were 5-7. They needed to win their last four games to make the playoffs. They did just that. They actually had a big upset in the playoffs before losing at Denver by a touchdown in the AFC Championship. No crime to that. Arizona started out last season 3-4. Then they went 7-2 the rest of the way. And really, it's all about both of these quarterbacks. Phillip Rivers and Carson Palmer, if you take the last half of the season for each of them, they combined the two of them for 29 touchdowns against just 12 picks. In fact, Carson Palmer down the stretch, only Peyton Manning threw for more yards than he did. So these are two teams that are really feeling good about themselves after last season. The issue with the Cardinals, though, in this game is that their defense is decimated. Carlos Dansby is now in Cleveland. Darrell Washington, their star linebacker, suspended for the season for violating a substance abuse policy of the NFL. Darnell Dockett out for the season with a knee injury that he just got last week in practice. And then you have their standout in the secondary, Tyrann Mathieu. He's recovering from a torn ACL and LCL. It's not really looking like he'll play. So Phillip Rivers has at least that advantage in this game. He doesn't have to deal with the Cardinals at full strength defensively.
Which way would you go on this one? I mean, the Chargers 13-10, the Cardinals 4-6. The Cardinals have got a strangely poor record on Monday Night Football, actually. I don't know if that comes into it, really. I suppose we kind of throw those stats around for when we're talking about the Premier League. You know, some teams just seem to not play as well on certain nights or in front of the TV cameras. The match spread is -3, the Cardinals even money, and +3, the Chargers 5-6. And the total points is under and over 46.5 here, Gil, with William Hill. What's your favourite bet in this match?
Yeah, I wish I could be more dynamic in terms of saying, oh, this team's definitely going to take that. You know, I was able to come on your show before the Super Bowl 2 years ago and pick the Ravens, and last year I felt very strongly about the Seahawks. But, you know, here we are, week one, a Monday night game, Cardinals favored by 3. Your instinct is correct, I believe, about that Monday night stat. The Cardinals are historically, both, especially since they moved to Arizona in 1988, they've been a historically very poor football team. So they've been bad on Mondays and Sundays pretty much across the board. So I don't know how much that stat means. But this is a game that I honestly, I don't feel good about on the side or the total. I know that's not what the listener necessarily wants to hear, but I don't want to just throw out a pick to throw one out. It's a 3-point spread. That's a key number in the NFL. That's essentially, you know, every home field advantage is a 3-point advantage. So basically what Vegas is telling you is this is a toss-up. This is a toss-up, and good luck to you on this game. It's not the most bettable game on the slate this weekend.
Well, we'll stick to the other one then. We'll stick to Detroit. I like that one, -6 on the match spread, Gil. Hopefully speak to you again very soon.
Always enjoy it. Thanks, Lee.
So Gil's pretty sweet on Detroit there. We'll find out what happens. We'll be live for the first game, New York Giants at the Detroit Lions, and we'll bring you the rest of this evening's action through until 1 a.m. A busy evening coming up here on In Play Radio. First up, it's Nick Walsh, Tom Kerwin, Mel Wharton and Pete Farries taking you through the action through until 10 p.m. And then from 10 through until 1 a.m, Mark Wilson, Pete Farries and James Butler staying live for the US Open final in the tennis and the NFL football this evening. Plenty of sport to come here then this evening. It all kicks off from 5 p.m. We'll be live on the airwaves, and we'll bring you all of that action. It's all live here on In Play Radio.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.